Hello, welcome to FinOps Today. I'm Christina Carnazzo from the Ramp team, filling in this week for Alex Song, who's taking some well-deserved time off. On this week's episode, we're wrapping up season one and featuring some of our guests' best advice for scaling your finance team. We know finance leaders are all being asked to take on more responsibility, and the only way they're going to meet that challenge is by equipping their teams with the right strategies and tools. Let's revisit the practical takeaways that our guests shared on hiring, tooling, and prioritization that will help you take your team to the next level. In this episode, we'll feature some of the most insightful moments from Alex's conversations with the innovative folks at Stripe, 1Password, Capchase, and more. First up is Patty Kay, Head of Payments, Finance, and Strategy at Stripe, who explains how hiring for diversity and future leadership has helped Stripe become a SaaS rocket ship.
You know, I've been here 3.5 years. I think for the first year, it continued to be like hiring a lot of athletes across. I think in the second and third year I've been here, we have added a lot of depth to the experiences that we have, people who have been and have done and have built out certain areas. And then I think it's always about a diversity of different people, right? So my team right now, you know, I have like a gentleman who was an investor for the last like 15 years, and that he brings a very different experience. And then someone who has more mature kind of FP&A experience. And then someone who was at one of the networks and actually had a big stint in product. And so having a diversity of bench, I think is really important. The one other thing that I would say is like, I think hiring leaders early is important. And I think I probably was a little late to that as well. But the person that is comfortable, you're always looking for the person who's comfortable in 3 years with like much more complexity, much more scale, and all that. And for each one of your functions and areas, you kind of have to think about which ones are the most important and where should you be hiring ahead. And not necessarily, like, obviously, I love the person who knows how to build it from the ground up and the person who knows what it's like in 3 years. But it's actually, for me, more important that that person knows what it should be in a few years and has the right North Star, because it, to the extent you hire a lot of people who just do a lot of work and then you lose track of that kind of like 3-year outlook, I think that could be painful and it may take a lot more resources and people with that. But I think, again, it's a balance all the time. I think figuring out who has expertise and, you know, who can grow into it. And I think it's about diversity of team, I think, over time.
Artem Mashkov, CFO of SwagUp, also has strong opinions on hiring. In this next clip, he explains why your people should always come before your product.
And I'm a firm believer that your product doesn't matter. Great, you guys have a great product. You know why you have a great product? Because you have a great engineering team and you have a great product team. And if the minute you guys take away that product team and that engineering team, your product is going to fall behind. Same thing. You guys have great customer service. It's because of the team. So the only thing of value, and this I learned from retail and hospitality, you could have the most incredible food in the world, but if your service is trash, you're not going to be a good business, right? And same thing in retail. You could be selling the best product. You could have the iPhone. If your service is trash, if you don't have the right people, you're not going to make money. So for me, I think that if you're investing, wherever you're investing, it's got to come people first. And then what you want to do is you want to maximize your best people, right? That's why SaaS is there to augment, not to replace, right? So yeah, we spend a lot of time on this. We had a very lean back office team. So it's taking us some time to like line things up, to get the 409A done and all of that. But we're doing leveling up all the time, right? There's a lot of inflation, obviously, which is affecting people's salaries. There's a lot of jokes around that, hey, if I didn't get a 7.5 raise, then I lost money and all of that. So I think that's going to be top of mind. And look, everybody's been hit by the great resignation. The thing is, it's not always financially like connected.
Absolutely.
For me, that's the only thing that matters in a company. It's a virtuous circle, right? I think Richard Branson talks about is that your employees take care of your customers take care of the company, and the company has to take care of their employees. So it's not like customer is always right. No. Your employees are always right when you're the leadership and you're the company.
Next up, we have Scott Orne, COO of Cruise Consulting, who learned the hard way that you need to prioritize your own systems in order to be an effective resource for your customers.
There's an old saying that the cobbler has the ugliest shoes, meaning like you always prioritize your clients ahead of your own systems. And so we were totally guilty of that probably our first like 5 or 6 years. Like Vanessa and I used to do all the accounting and finance and tax compliance and all that kind of stuff. And then we got big enough where for us, it became like an amazing luxury to actually hire a CFO and controller internally. So thankfully, and by the way, having done that, things are so much smoother, so much better. Like we have such a, it's really, really nice. And again, I get like the same kind of reports that our clients get. I get those reports from our team internally. So I actually feel very blessed to have that and not be having to like, you know, get QuickBooks up to date at 11 p.m. at night or trying to file tax returns or 1099s. A couple of days before the deadline for Cruise because I prioritize us last. So that's really like us, we've professionalized our internal finance team too, which I really encourage, you know, effectively when a company comes and works with us as a client, that's what we're doing. We're professionalizing their entire finance and accounting function. And they get the benefit of all these processes that we've developed for all these other companies. But that is, it is a luxury to do that on your own. And I'm very grateful we're doing that now.
That's great. And I'm curious, you know, you have your internal finance function you've built out over the years. Do they also do client work? You know, is there just, you're just pulling in from the main workforce or you have something that's dedicated full-time, live and breathe, you know, internal work?
Yeah. One of our acting CFO does do some FP&A stuff for clients just because frankly, like it's not a big enough job yet to do it all the time. But that said, like I would say this is, I hope this doesn't come across as snotty or something like that, but like we're professionals at this. So we're very efficient, right? Like for someone, if the rest of the internal team wasn't speaking the language of the controller and the CFO, and also with like Vanessa and I there with all this like institutional knowledge, it would probably be a little bit different. So we're kind of lucky in that respect, but it is becoming like a very big job. So I think probably in the near future, it'll be a full-time job.
Jonah Rems, head of finance at Capchase, explains how he's growing his team in three key areas, FinOps and accounting, FP&A, and strategic finance. He also describes making the necessary move from QuickBooks to NetSuite after only a few months in order to give his team the appropriate foundation to scale.
So only a few months in, actually, we decided to make the move from QuickBooks to NetSuite. We kind of ran a process of looking at what are the accounting systems that we potentially want to use? And naturally, alongside that, we want somebody that can be a true owner, not just of the system, but all things accounting. So right away, within the first few months, wanted to make that conscious decision to bring somebody online that can understand the business from that ground level and start to put in place policies, procedures, you know, reporting requirements, et cetera, that really allow us to, you know, not just operate efficiently as a 15 or 50 person organization, grew to many multiples of that. So very quickly brought on somebody to kind of head up accounting, start to learn from across every aspect of the organization, how are we running today? Where do we need to improve, et cetera? And then to start to then build under there. So we have that accounting function and she, Sally, who heads that up, has brought on some additional resources since that time. And we're also really focused on making sure there's, call it internationalization of it as well, because we have a lot of offices in different areas. So that FinOps and accounting is one area. The other that we very quickly identified of making sure that we kind of upscale our, you know, abilities is in the FP&A space. So we think it's really important to have somebody that can truly provide that feedback and analysis to the business, having a pulse on taking the data, getting it in front of the right people, and kind of what I always like to say, shining a spotlight on issues and opportunities, which I think is really integral at a growing stage of the business where we're making decisions in such a expedited manner that you really want to make sure that you can make data-driven decisions and you're getting that to the right people at the right time. The third kind of leg of how I think about scaling the team is on the strategic finance side. And the way that we've kind of approached this is strategic finance is a little bit embedded in all of that. So it's, you know, it has aspects of accounting and FinOps. It has aspects of FP&A. And then it kind of ties it all together from the company perspective what are some of the step functions, if you will, that will change how the company looks? And how do we understand and communicate to the different areas of the business to make sure that we're all aligned with the overall company goals that we're communicating to the external markets? And so we're also scaling the team up there in the coming months, bringing on a new hire. So that's kind of a bit about, you know, the background, where it started as you know, just me and the employee 15 or so, and kind of adding on that those specialty focus areas across the org. Now, in terms of what I do day to day, you know, the short answer is every day is quite different and exciting in a startup like Capchase. I think the more opportunities grow, the more that daily amount kind of changes. But I do really like to split it between focusing on those three different areas that I kind of identified of, you know, the FinOps, the strategic finance, and the FP&A. And so like an example of that is putting in place and reviewing the policies, you know, in FinOps, whether that's the monthly close processes, whether that's, you know, expense and other employee policies related to onboarding, ongoing management, et cetera. And then on the FP&A side, always looking to work with on the data side, how can we make sure that we're ingesting data in the right way, putting together reports that are useful for the team, you know, having meetings with the respective departments to, you know, look at their trends, identify how can we rethink our forecasts, et cetera, and having that constant line of communication open, which I think is key. So, you know, always having meetings within the business and different kind of business level owners there. And then on the strategic finance, you know, sometimes this might be ad hoc and sometimes it feels like you can kind of have longer stretches of focusing on one area, so, you know, such as, for example, anytime we're in an equity raise process, that can really dominate quite a bit of time in terms of making sure getting materials together, positioning the business appropriately, responding to investor questions, et cetera. And so, you know, spending quite a bit of time there too. So it's no one day is the same, and I definitely would not trade that for anything.
That's a great overview. Just curious, actually, maybe you can give us some context on how large is your team today and how does that compare to the overall size of the organization?
Sure. So today we're actually like fairly lean. I know I kind of split it up into a few different pillars, which might make it sound like we're quite large, but it's myself. We have two on the accounting side with a third to come shortly. And we have one on the FP&A team. And then we have another coming on the strategic finance side. So all in, we have six folks, including myself.
And I'm just curious, is there a mental heuristic that you have, or maybe you don't, but you know, right now, 6 divided by 100 is 6%, right? Over the course of time, do you see that number, you know, potentially going up, going down? And is there some normalized, you know, headcount that you're targeting?
Yeah, look, I definitely see that going up in terms of, you know, what we're targeting. The way that I kind of think about it is, I think the team certainly has to get bigger. And I think it is in some ways, you know, finance can be proactive and reactive. And I think in the part of terms of how big the team can get is a little bit more of the latter and the reactive. What I mean by that is given the complexity of the business, both from on the operations side and you know, what our go-to-market approach is, as well as the composition of the rest of our organization, I think that can also really dictate what you need from finance. So, you know, as an example, we are in the business of financing and money movement, and there's a lot of, you know, requirements around that that we'll need to continue adding to our, like, and upscaling our team around being able to handle some of that. So if you think about kind of treasury and those sorts of kind of roles.
Aaron Sussman-Avroe also discusses why focusing on employees and establishing an atmosphere of trust and vulnerability is integral to creating a successful team.
I think there's also an ability for that leadership team to actually develop, again, that like personal relationship where you can be vulnerable and say like, hey, I feel a little lost on this topic. I don't understand why we're doing this. Can you help me here? Or I'm managing my team and I'm worried about XYZ. Like, what's your thought process here? And I think what ultimately happens sometimes is people feel so afraid to not be perfect to everyone around them that they're afraid to say like, hey, I'm struggling with this thing. Can you help me? But I think what happens there is then I get advice. You get that empathy. That person's willing to be vulnerable with you. And then ultimately, like, you can develop that relationship where you have psychological safety. Because if you don't have that and you feel everything's a threat and you feel like you have to be perfect and everyone's kind of coming after each other, it doesn't matter how many meetings you have. It doesn't matter how many offsites you have. You'll never develop that like level of trust. And I think part of it just that it's okay to say that we failed. It's okay to say we messed up. It's okay to say we made a mistake. You know, we try not to make the same mistake twice, right? But it's okay to make mistakes. And if you're vulnerable with folks and you share that with them, you will earn their trust. And I think ultimately like that psychological safety and trust is what allows for like great collaborative cross communication. And, you know, I wasn't great at that early in my career. That's something you really have to learn and experience. And I think it's something that we do really well at Roe and has helped us. You know, a lot of our folks, our leadership members have been with us for multiple years and have scaled inside their role. And I think that's relatively rare. And I think that's one of the reasons we've been able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. That's super inspiring. You know, where Ramp is at a stage where, you know, we're roughly 280, maybe almost 300 people. And, you know, we're navigating through a lot of these challenges today, right? It's figuring out how to collaborate effectively, how to figure out, you know, common ground and work across different functions and whatnot. That's really inspiring. You know, one of these days, hopefully we'll be 700 people and, you know, communicating and working well together. Coming back to the question of operating leverage and scaling, what's been effective at making you better at your job and more effective? Again, we can take this in whichever direction you want to talk about. Is it outsourcing? Is it using great vendors? Is it hiring smart people? You know, what are some of the things that you found really helped you out over the last few years?
I think it's a few things. I think some of it touches on what we just talked about, which is, again, having the trust of your team and your CEO is just so important, because I believe, just like if you think about it in sports or other areas, when you feel like you have to be perfect all the time and you're unable to make a mistake, you are on edge and you are really unable to perform at your best. And so if you feel like there is no margin for error for you, in some areas, obviously there are, but like in general, if you feel like there's no margin for error for you and you're unable to make a mistake, I think that's where people get themselves in trouble, because either that's where mistakes get made because, you know, haste makes waste. And I think oftentimes like what happens is to folks is like they make a mistake in a model. It was innocuous. Like it's hard to build a 50,000 tab model and not have any review and not make a mistake. But then revenue's off by $1 million. And so instead of like kind of just owning up to it, saying, hey, I messed this up, like how do you want to deal with it? It's like, well, we could end up like reforecasting something different here. And then you just end up in this long web of areas where you're ultimately trying to chase your tail, and it's really hard to scale when that's the case. And so that's why I think, you know, when CEOs ask me what they should look for in CFOs, or CFOs or finance folks ask me what they're looking for in the company, I just think it's, you got to find someone that you can trust. And I think ultimately you can become, my goal is that our management team can worry about all the things I need to worry about, but they'll know that from a financial perspective that I have this, I have my hand on the wheel. And when things come up, because they will, I will alert everyone. I will make it clear as to what's going on and why, and we'll address it. But they don't have to be thinking that in 3 weeks they'll find out that, you know, revenue did XYZ.
Tom Egan, CFO of Divvy Homes, discusses how hiring for complementary skill sets rather than a mirror image of your skills is the best way to grow a high-velocity team.
I went from a career in banking and giant institutions down to a Series A company with, I was, I think, employee number 15 when I joined. I was the only person in finance broadly, including, you know, accounting, capital markets, or FP&A, as well as the only lawyer. And so I sort of very quickly took over. My initial mandate was really to focus on the capital markets aspect. I also took over the legal duties, which at the time was really focused primarily on the capital markets as well. So it was, you know, executing new deals, signing NDAs with new investors, and things like that. My first hire was about 6 months after I joined. It was a guy who had a lot of FP&A experience and wanted to learn about the capital markets. So it was a really good fit for us, because it, for me in particular, because it was complementary skill set that he had that I was able to bolster. I think my initial instinct was to find someone that looked a lot like me and had my experience. But what I realized in the recruiting process was that over time we needed to build out, you know, pretty broad functionality within the finance org. And capital markets, while it was an important aspect of the business and a complex one, that was very much my skill set. And so I felt like it was important to have a complementary skill set come in. So the first hire, I refer to him as sort of a Swiss Army knife. So he's covered really, you know, all aspects of our finance team from start to finish. He came in initially to help me out on the capital market side, but very quickly was able to expand his role and start taking on a lot of the FP&A. And so he was instrumental in helping us model out the business and do a lot of the financial diligence around our Series B. And he helped me also build out that function internally. So today he runs strategic finance for us, which encapsulates FP&A as well as investor relations and strategic planning.
And finally, we have Jeannie DeGuzman, CFO of 1Password, who explains that she helped grow her team by looking for hires who could dive into the nitty-gritty details on day one and lead with resilience.
Yeah. So I would say, like, one way to put it is one of my very first hires was my right hand through the last 2 years, and she came from a big four. And I knew her from the big four. So I knew the kind of personality she was. Let's say today, she's our senior director of finance ops. So she's somebody who I knew would be able to be super operational, but also really understand the backbone of financial audits, because we needed that. And we need to understand the GL. And so for me, what you talked about around grit and resilience, that was like number one for me, because you need somebody who's able to just consume a lot and just be okay not getting everything 100% perfect the first time around, and just kind of be able to move on and do the next thing and content switch really quickly. So like that individual today is our finance ops person, because I know that's what she's good at. I hired an array of people. So I hired people that had some industry experience, and I hired people that didn't come from the big four, but had accounting backgrounds and that had, you know, close experience, because you kind of needed that. And so I tried to pick those people that with, like, first of all, with the grit and resilience, but also the ability, they have a special background, but they can apply it to like many other things. I think that a big four background is really great, especially if you know that the GL is a mess. You need just somebody who can come in and like quickly sort through things and make some decisions and have that, you know, professional judgment that you can rely and trust on. I do think somebody they don't have to be a CPA or anything like that, but if they've had transactional experience, and by transactional, I mean AP or AR, like, you know, like being able to understand invoicing and billing, that I think is really important as well. And then FP&A for sure, like bringing somebody in with an FP&A background has always been like one of my top three hires.
We hope you enjoyed this compilation episode of FinOps Today. We're taking a break for a few weeks, but we'll be back with more thoughtful and provocative conversations with finance leaders in season two. In the meantime, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on whatever platform you use. And if there's something you want us to explore more in season two, or if you have feedback to share, don't hesitate to give us a shout at podcast@ramp.com. That's podcast@ramp.com.